It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe, celebrating episode 250, which is a big milestone here. 5 years of doing Way of the Warrior.
It's crazy.
Right, yeah. And I want to just take a moment before we kind of get into all this and just say thank you to all of you who have been with us for those 5 years, because as fun as it is to sit around and do this thing, it really doesn't happen unless anyone listens. And you have listened consistently, and it grows year in and year out. And that allows us to get to episode 250. So we are here because of you, and just wanted to say thank you real quickly, and then we will cut the BS and get into all of the MMA action. Yeah.
Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 yep, seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Full mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
I start with an apology. We are broadcasting from the MLive offices, and last week Joe came down with an illness, so I had to call upon my friend Julian to step in, and I had no idea how many fans of the show actually work here, and they've been giving him quite a fair amount of guff for his pick of Shogun going to demolish OSP, and that clearly did not happen. So I for those of you who are angry at him, that's of course not why he's here this week, because I just wanted to save him from the embarrassment. But OSP went out and did I thought it was a really, really fun week.
Can I pause you, Eric?
Sure.
So before we go beyond that, I want to say thank you to you for carrying this show, for the dedication. I was a fan before I joined the show, so a big thank you to you sticking with it. I think a lot of people love and appreciate the show, and it's your love child.
And I appreciate,
for lack of better words.
I appreciate that, and I would say back to you that we've seen a tremendous amount of growth in the last 12 months, which I attribute solely to you joining the show.
I'm humbled.
Thank you. But yeah, we had, I thought, a really fun weekend of fights.
Yeah.
Starting with Luke Rockhold just walking through Michael Bisping in a way that, as much as I wasn't really sure how Michael was going to do it, I thought the turnaround was a little quick. Yeah. So I thought that he was kind of already on his heels, if you will.
It appears he's still nursing that eye injury.
Yes.
His eye is clearly not 100%.
Yes.
And when you need depth perception, and this is a sport of millimeters and milliseconds, that's going to be a factor in this. Luke Rockhold, I think, is an underrated guy. I mean, I guess he is a top five guy, but him getting knocked out in such crazy fashion by TRT Belford, I think kind of public perception knocked him down a couple pegs.
Sure.
But this is a guy who is knocking on the door of a title fight, you know.
And
he's right there.
And he's, of course, done his due diligence. We will henceforth call it the Sonnen. And he has said, hey, look, when Vitor Belfort fails that test, here is my phone number. I am ready to go.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting fight, because I do think you saw, for me anyway, you saw something interesting on Friday night, and that is that Michael Bisping, and we talked about it last week, Michael Bisping had been a gatekeeper, right? You've got to go through Bisping to get to the title shot. He, even on his win streak, was getting further and further away from the title shot, but he had always been a gatekeeper, right? You got to go through
him.
He's
kind of been a staple of the division.
Sure.
Sure.
And he was absolutely, eye injury or not, he stepped in there, right? Of his own volition, he was absolutely outclassed by a superior fighter to do something to him that had never been done before. He'd never been subbed at all. So head kick, guillotine, and it's game over. And
props to Rockhold for going for the sub there, too. He could have just kept beating on him and went for the TKO or KO.
He absolutely did go for the sub. And I walked away from that going, okay, now this gets really, really interesting. We'll talk a little bit about a lot of middleweights. There's a lot of fights out there that people are excited to see. Lots of exciting fights coming up. But Rockhold out there certainly makes that equation much more difficult than it would had Bisping beat him, right? Because Bisping beats him, we're back to talking about Strikeforce guys versus UFC
guys.
And blah, 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 blah. But now walking right through Michael Bisping and absolutely outclassing him makes it so that you've got to have this conversation that, yeah, I think if Vitor Belfort gets dinged already and doesn't make it to the fight, I think absolutely you call Luke Rockhold.
Absolutely.
Unequivocally.
I don't think he was hurt from this either. I don't remember seeing a medical suspension by any means.
I did not.
And short of the spinning heel kick knockout that he ate, and it was a mistake on his part, but it was against a guy who is 20-1 testosterone levels. So let's not forget that. But short of that, he's been nothing but impressive in the ring. His submission skills are, if he can grapple with you, you better watch out, because he's going for the sub, and there's a good chance he's going to get it. And then those kicks. I mean, he's just got he kicks like a lightweight. He's got Anthony Pettis kicks.
He does.
In a frame plus 50 pounds. So he's fun to watch. He's been tearing through the division, and keep your eye out for Luke Rockhold in 2015.
Let's play a little MMA math. What happens? Belfort drops out 2015. Rockhold gets the shot against Weidman. Do you think he's got the answer, or do you think he's just another?
I think it would be a tough fight. I think he's more dynamic than Chris Weidman. I think Chris Weidman is more of a traditional BJJ guy, traditional kickboxing guy. I think Rockhold will bring different looks to Weidman that Weidman isn't used to seeing in more of his traditional, Longo, Sierra, BJJ camps
sure.
that he's in right
yes,
now.
Sure.
They're more the old school boxing type camps. That's the way I perceive them a lot. And Rockhold's really pushing the edge of grappling, coming up with very dynamic setups and moves. As well as his striking. I mean, like I said, those kicks. Jeez, he's just tearing people apart. If he touches you with a kick to the abdomen with that much weight and power behind him, you're going to feel it.
Absolutely, and obviously you hit more than two of those, and I think that changes the dynamic of just about any
yeah.
fight. Because that was, of course, we've said this a million times, that was, of course, the Bas Rutenism, right? He'll tell you that any fighter on earth, if you hit him in the liver, the fight is over.
Yeah.
There's no, you can't have a stronger liver.
Right.
You can't train to get yep. kicked in the liver. It's just, it's a light switch to your body. If it takes a certain amount of damage, we're done here.
Yeah, his success rate is pretty high with that too, and I think it's just kicking right under that elbow where we don't see it as much in competition, and perhaps guys aren't training blocking that as much.
Well, I don't know how you. I mean, because you can't really work it out, right? And it's like practicing taking head kicks. You're just doing damage to your body for the sake of doing damage.
Right.
You can't
yeah.
really improve your chin.
We
talk about guys.
He's got long legs too, so I think he might be able to touch guys at a little more distance than they're used to being.
And the other, I thought there was a lot of fun fights on the card, but the other one of note is clearly Ally Quinta, a huge, huge win over Ross Pearson.
Yeah,
an impressive year for Al, who I think has been off of people's radar for far too long. But this
yep.
is a huge win that I don't know what you do with him, because unfortunately at 155, I don't know that I envy anybody who's trying to make
right.
a go there, because it makes no sense at this point, especially with the champ already locked in with his upcoming bout. I don't know what this really does to him, because there's so many guys that are right at that level.
Anthony Pettis and Gilbert Melendez are obviously
in December,
coaching
yeah.
Ultimate Fighter right now.
So that happens. But again, what I'm saying is Cerrone's got a fight with Miles Jury.
Yep. I think he's knocking on the top 15. I think
sure.
you give him a top,
and I'm,
maybe even a top yeah, 10 shot, right?
What don't send me hate email. I'm not saying he gets a title shot.
Right, right.
Ross
no,
Pearson.
No. We're
but
just
I'm
talking
saying,
about how tight up the
I'm
division
saying,
is.
Like,
yeah.
you know, to get into that top 10 is even super difficult at 155, because it's just stacked with guys who, at any given moment, for the most part, that top 10 list at 155, any given moment could co-main event a title fight.
Oh, yeah. I think Ross Pearson was his step into the top 15, really. He's definitely going to get a top 15 fight. Not sure how that's going to shake out, as busy as they are. But speaking of Chris Weidman, he is Chris Weidman's protege, right? Same story, training at the same spot. Chris Weidman's always in his corner. So you know he's getting top-notch training.
For sure.
Although I think he got subbed a couple times, which were a little questionable coming from that Sierra or Matt Serra BJJ school.
Ray Longo, all that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a young guy, too, so he's still developing. I mean, early 20s, I believe, and already knocking on the top 15.
Yeah, because he's only a couple years older than Kevin Lee, right? And Kevin's just
20. I think he's the second youngest guy.
Yeah, because Kevin's just 21, so
yep, yep.
Al will be 23, 24, something like that. But a huge, huge win for him. We go to the next night where we go to Brazil, and I said it last week before it happened, and then it happened. John Lanker missed weight again.
Yep.
Ian McCall had a blood virus that forced him out of the fight. But you've got two things here that I don't even know what you – like, I don't even know how John keeps his job, right? And he has the gall on Monday to talk about a title fight.
He's saying he thinks he deserves it when he still can't make weight. There's no way they can gamble that on him. So for those of you who don't know, a title shot, you have to be 125 on the dot.
On the
155
dot.
On the dot. It's not 155 and a half.
It's point nothing.
Yes.
It's on the nose, right?
And if you're going to bank an event on a guy who's missed chronically throughout his career, I just don't think you can do that.
And I don't even think chronically is the proper description. It's just it's worse than chronically, right? It seems like now it's like a joke, right? So I say it on the show.
Yeah.
I say it on the show. I tweet it right before it happens. And
right.
Lo and behold, it happens. Yeah. And then Ian dropping out sucks, of course. But I don't know, man. He took a lot of hate from a lot of guys on Twitter, and I get the frustration, especially when you're dealing with these cards that don't have a lot going for them as far as name and brand recognition,
right,
that you want to see a fight like this. And I think you do want to see a fight like this. And the only good side is that we can reschedule this because neither one of them made it, right?
Yeah, they canceled the fight.
But I'm not really – I don't know that I'm going to jump all over Ian. If you really got sick and they say that you shouldn't fight, I just think –
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, did he overtrain – he was quoted actually saying that, you know, he may have overtrained a little bit. The weight cut was hard for him. So that may have contributed to this. But at the end of the day, it's a medical condition. It's not like he decided not to fight. I'm sure if he had any choice, he would have fought. And he's the guy who, you know, is really top three in that division.
But again, a guy, I don't know that I want to see him fight. We've talked about this ad nauseum, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. But I'm not sure I want to see him fight Mighty Mouse.
I don't care that he's top three.
I mean, if anything,
he lost to him once already, maybe twice, at least once.
It was what? He won, draw, loss, right? That was their trilogy?
I can't remember. We'd have to look it up.
I think that's what it was. But what I'm saying is the Lanker fight was really interesting. I just don't know what you do with him and why he's still in the organization if he can't make weight. That's your job. And if you want to have a larger discussion about weight in mixed martial arts, let's do that. I'm all for that. But we as fans and they as organizations, being Bellator, King of the Cage, Cage Rage, UFC, pick anyone you want, right? You can't have it both ways. You can't be mad that they miss weight and then allow fighters to drop 60 pounds to get there.
Yeah.
And if we need to have a discussion about, and we have talked about it both off the show and on the show, if you want to start a thing where while we're doing WADA or VADA tests, depending on which one we pick, you want to also spot check weight.
Yeah.
I'm totally all about that. I think the safer the sport gets, the better it is for everybody. And I know you don't think Mark Hunt would like to fight 145-pound fighters. Of course he would.
Right.
But he
asked for an exception going into this fight because he walked in, he was over 300 pounds.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this in a second. But what I'm saying is, like, you don't think a heavy hitter like that would like to be able to drop 100 pounds and fight somebody at 145? Of course he would. But that's insane. It would probably kill him.
But
right now
he would probably kill somebody else.
But right now there's nothing stopping him from trying that.
Sure.
There's nothing stopping. As insane as this statement coming out of my mouth is, and I will readily admit it, there is nothing stopping him from trying.
Are you saying you think there should, like, the UFC should penalize guys?
The
who
UFC
don't make
doesn't
weight?
Govern themselves, right? So I'm not saying the UFC should do anything, but if you know, if the UFC or fans of mixed martial arts or athletic commissions in general feel that this is a problem, and we know that they do, then do something. Do spot weight checks.
Agreed.
And go, look, if we check you 15 days out and you're 40 pounds over, you're not fighting because you're not going to make it.
Yeah, it's not an easy or a simple problem to solve.
No.
The Olympics has it. Collegiate wrestling has it. You name the sport where you have to make a weight.
But those two, though, have a lot more weight classes separated by 2 or 3 pounds, and that becomes becomes a more nuanced argument, right? Because if you want to drop 7 pounds to go down 5 weight classes, that's a little bit different than starting at 205 and trying to hit 145.
Sure. Friend of the show Ryan Dempsey actually asked a question last week: should we have a weight class between light heavyweight at 205 and heavyweight 265? That's a 60-pound difference between, you know, look at Daniel Cormier. He's fighting great at light heavyweight, and he was a tiny heavyweight. Well, I guess he was winning at heavyweight, too.
Sure.
So the question is, that's a 60-pound stretch between guys right there. You could have a 210 guy, and then you could have a Mark Hunt walking in over 265.
Mm-hmm. And making it barely by the letter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, like I told him it was him on Twitter, asked the same question to me on Twitter, and I said, look, I don't mind having more weight classes, but we barely can keep heavyweight cards together, so we can't have another division at this point. And he might be able to see in the future, and that would maybe fix it by splitting it in half.
Sure.
But right now, what I see is guys barely able to make it into these fights, and we'll talk about the heavyweight fight here in a minute.
That's an interesting point. So if there was called a 235-pound
right,
division,
cruiserweight or whatever he called it, which cruiserweight seems like odd because in the WWE, that would be like 115 pounds. Right. But
would we see a bunch of light heavyweight guys go up into that? I think you would.
Well, you would see the. I think you would see the older guys, right?
Yeah.
That's already.
And then you'd even see some of the heavier guys try and cut down. So that might increase competition. Now that I think about it,
undoubtedly would increase competition. My question, from a business standpoint, is: we already have guys that can't make weight, or make a fight, I should say, or even make weight.
Yeah,
Mark.
It's
Hunt,
a light division,
you know,
for sure.
It's just, it's so thin right now. When it used to be the division in the UFC, and right now it's really thin. So I don't know that splitting it right now is necessarily
Agreed.
The right call. That said, we absolutely could.
Listen, if the UFC can make more money on it, they'll do it.
Well, I mean, and then there's always that. The main event was Shogun and Ovince St. Preux. And again, like I said at the beginning of the show, we are apologizing on behalf of Julian for doubting OSP having any chance. If anybody has listened to more than one episode of the show, I barely go a show without mentioning OSP's name. So you know that I was certainly leaping out of my seat 35 seconds into it when Shogun is flat on his back and OSP is having his hand raised. And if you have not done yourself the favor of seeing the Vine where where the skateboard goes in the octagon and Shogun actually slips, and that's what Ovince St. Preux capitalizes on, you owe yourself that. But
he owned the cage. When he walked in the cage, I think everybody knew he was going to win. It just the presence he brought in there, he looked like a beast. He just, his dexterity at the point, you get that feeling like this guy is peaking right now. He's on point. And then we went in there and walked through him.
Just absolutely railroaded him.
Yeah.
And sets up again another really interesting dynamic because it was supposed to be Jimmy Manoa.
Yep.
And I think it's easy to say this 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 nights afterwards, but I think, and I said this last week, I thought Manoa would have been an easier fight for Shogun.
Agreed. Yeah. Actually.
I mean, it's easy to say it now that he
lost. Clearly, Eric.
Right,
yes.
But I mean, even prior to that, I was saying that I thought Manoa would have been a much easier fight. And I don't think Ovince St. Preux is quite ready for the shot, although this is a huge win for him. But he's definitely a guy that's growing and changing and evolving and a dude to be on the lookout for.
Because, he's ranked 9th right now.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two more top anything below 8th, anything under him fights, and then he's right there. The interesting thing is, what do we do with Shogun from here?
Well, I think his camp is 1,000% right?
Middleweight?
You do what Lyoto Machida did. You go down to middleweight. You take a catch 195 catch weight fight against somebody. I don't know who that is. Is that Dan Henderson again? I don't know.
Right, because Henderson is going down to middleweight.
Right. They're both going down. Maybe I don't know that I want to see that fight again, but maybe they do.
But
get him down to 185 and see what happens. Look, we were all 6 months ago writing Lyoto out of the organization.
Agreed.
Like, get him out of here. At 205, he is a worthless fighter.
Right.
It was the Machida era, and then that ended 18 seconds after it started. And
good point.
There's no point in keeping him around. And you put him at middleweight, and he's a much different fighter.
Yeah, the easy thing to say is that he's had a full career and it's time to walk away.
And I've had that discussion all week on Twitter, and I get it, right? You've watched him go through Pride and take an insane amount of damage.
Yeah.
And at 32 years old, you do ask a lot of questions about him from a human perspective. As a human being, do you really need to keep doing this? And unfortunately, we live in a society where you get to make those choices yourself. And he and his camp clearly feel that it's not his twilight of his career at 32. I'm with some of the people I've been talking with on Twitter that I do believe he's had more than his fair share of damage in those 32 years.
Yeah.
And nobody would knock him if it was time to walk away.
He could be 28 and I'd feel the same way. To your point, he's had that much damage in that many fights. He's been a professional fighter at the top level for that long. There's a small chance that he could have a big Mark Hunt-esque comeback or Lyoto Machida dropping weight and then doing better. But it's just sad to see. If he goes in the ring again and gets knocked out in 30 seconds, I think everybody's going to feel, pretty bad for him.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know who you do that with at 195, but I like the idea of dropping to a lighter weight and seeing what happens and use his strength and his dexterity and his power at a lower weight class and see if you can make a go at it. And if you can't, It's time to go at 33 or 34.
Is he kind of like a last generation fighter in that, I mean, successful in Pride, but can't stand with the modern day UFC guys? Do you see that in him?
I see that in him. I'm not sure. I'm just thinking if I can answer that question intelligently and say, well, yes, right? Well, no, because Mark Hunt's still around, right?
Right.
But you remove Mark Hunt, and because Vanderlei's banned for life.
For life.
You know, Dan.
Are we going to talk about Vanderlei?
We can if you want to, and being kicked out of Bellator. We can talk about all that stuff. You know, banned for life. You've got Dan, but Dan was successful in both organizations and kind of just age caught up to him, right? Being 66 years old just was the thing that caught
Although
him.
He's got another fight scheduled.
I know he does. but I don't know anybody other than Shogun that's from that era that's still fighting other than those two guys. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, it makes me think of Chuck Liddell. He started getting knocked out, and then Dana White had the heart to heart with him and said, hey, you know, it's time to hang him up, and we're going to take care of you. You know, you are a Hall of Famer. You're a legend in the sport. Let's start looking at the next chapter of your life.
And you see the UFC beginning that story, right? He's got him coaching against Anderson Silva so they can both be national heroes, and then they don't fight at the end.
Right?
Everybody wins.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of your coach throwing in the towel, right?
Yes.
But it's your manager. It's your family. It's your Dana Whites and the Fertitta brothers kind of throwing in the towel for you. And because you're a fighter, you want to compete the rest of your life, right? But sometimes you need that outside perspective to know that we're going to tap out for you.
You certainly need good coaches and good people to give you some good advice. But I'll let this play out. Obviously, it's not up to me. But as a fan, I'll let this play out and see if they're really going to do that. But I sort of am okay with the idea of try one at 95, see what happens. And then if that works, go down to 85, and we'll talk from there.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up next, we'll talk about UFC and Bellator going head-to-head this weekend because there's a lot of hubris going back and forth and some interesting things to pay attention to, especially from the ESPN perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's so much news to go through. We'll get through most of it as fast as we possibly can. It is Way of the Warrior, episode 250. It's your MMA show. It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Joe, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts as we celebrate 250 episodes of this beloved show. UFC 180 this weekend and Bellator 131 going head-to-head Saturday night. And a lot of people asking some questions that we won't spend a whole lot of time on, but just something to pay attention to. And that is with the Viacom ownership of Spike and then, of course, the tentacles into ESPN. What exactly will be happening on ESPN on Saturday night when all of this is going on? Because ESPN has been, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of relationship with the UFC. But this will be interesting to see how big a deal they try and make out of Ortiz and Bonner versus Verdum and Hunt, and what that sort of narrative looks like when you get to late Saturday night as this stuff starts to wrap up.
Yeah, and I think the other piece to that is Chael Sonnen is going to debut on ESPN this weekend as their MMA commentator. Now, if you remember, they kind of cleared the house of all their MMA staff. They only have Brett Yakamoto or Akamoto on staff, and now they got Chael Sonnen. So is he going to, cover more Bellator or the UFC this weekend? What is he going to have to say about the UFC?
Well,
brilliant move by ESPN, by the way, for picking up Chael.
Certainly a brilliant move, but if you listen to Chael's podcast, he's only basically talking to UFC and WWE fighters and performers, right?
Sure.
And he never, ever says anything, really. I mean, even on his first episode when Ariel gets to grill him a little bit and kind of...
I wonder if he's under, like, some type of contractual obligations to not speak poorly
of his
former
employer. Fine. I just think it's kind of an interesting insider thing to look out for this weekend if you're into that sort of thing, as you get to watch what that coverage will look like as Chael starts. And
I'm just excited to see him on ESPN. That's
right?
Going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
And he's clearly a brilliant on-camera personality. I wonder if he does so well with the MMA coverage that they'll branch him out into NFL and NBA or whatever other sports.
That would be interesting, given the fact that, and not to be a super fan about it, but like when you listen, he readily throws all of those sports under the bus that he doesn't care about them. So that would be really interesting if they were to
do
that.
I think money will motivate him to go in whatever direction they want him to.
Clearly. Okay, so this weekend we've got at the main card level, you've got Fabricio Verdum taking on Mark Hunt. Cain Velasquez injured, and the ultimatum was dropped by Dana White that he has to defend that title by March.
Yep.
And if he does not do that, this interim title becomes the title. So I'll be anxious to see Mark Hunt carrying around the interim strap that becomes the real strap.
I think there's two sides to that coin, right?
There's only one. It's the Mark Hunt side.
Well, that's another coin. As far as setting a timeline on Cain Velasquez, one, I think it's good that you have to set a timeline on these interim titles, or the champions need to fight within a certain time period. But the other side of that is he going to push injured fighters, being Cain in this situation, to get into the ring sooner to maintain their belt? So it really goes both ways, right? So Cain knows that this March is looming. Is he going to try and recover quicker so that he can fight in March when he might not be 100%, perhaps may hurt himself more, etc.?
But what doctor is going to clear him to do that?
The same doctor that clears every guy who gets a six-month to a one-year suspension for anything. The same doctors who gave all these guys TRT.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, but the main event at this point, regardless of whether or not Cain's going to rush back with a, you know, broken arm or whatever, is Werdum and Mark Hunt. And you laughed at me before we started when I said that I'm really excited this weekend to see my boy Mark Hunt walking around with his new shiny title, as you clearly don't think that this is a possibility.
Well, okay, so let's break this down. Mark Hunt is a huge underdog. He's got several factors going against him. One, he took the fight on less than a month's notice, so
sure.
He has to cut weight.
Yep.
He had to cut it's like 40 pounds roughly. Two, it's at elevation, so as soon as he found out about it, he flew out to Mexico, and he's been struggling adjusting to the elevation, whereas Verdum's been in Mexico 2 months trying to acclimate to the higher elevation. And three, Mark's been struggling with some really tough personal issues this week. It hasn't come out exactly what happened, but he gave an interview with Ariel Helwani, and he just, I was watching it with my wife, and I thought he was on drugs. He just seemed so out of it, so distracted. I mean, there was something major going on in his life that's been weighing him down. And he would say in the interview that his losing streak, he went on like a 6-fight losing streak before he's been doing really well recently.
Yeah.
That was all attributed to things outside of the cage. He wasn't mentally right. He had personal issues going on. And then he would say in the next sentence, I've got a ton of personal things going on right now. I'm in a horrible place. So if that factors into it, which he's saying it will factor into it, those are all things, you know, check marks in Verdum's box against Hunt. Now, do I think it would be awesome to see Hunt go in there and knock him out Mike Tyson style? Of course. But he's just got a lot of cards stacked against him at this point.
Even if there aren't cards stacked against him, though, would you logically root for Hunt, or do you just see Verdum's skill set as being so vast and so...
On paper, Verdum's the winner, right? He's a number one contender.
Amazing, right?
He hasn't fought a lot lately. I think a lot of people forget that he hasn't been fighting 5 times a year. You know, he's only had a couple big wins in the last couple of years, which is great. I think Mark Hunt is the fan favorite, right?
Sure.
More personable. He speaks English. Everybody loves watching the big knockouts. And he's had some fantastic knockouts recently over Big Country and a number of other guys. So if I had to put money on it, it'd be Verdum. If you had to put money on it, Eric, where does it go?
It's going on Mark Hunt. Even though, even though logically I get it, you know.
Right.
And if, you know, if you put Cain back in there, it becomes more interesting to me for Verdum to win, right?
I'd be pulling for Cain in Mexico.
I think it's logical to pull for him because it makes for a really good story, but I just like I'm always a fan of the underdog, and
okay.
I understand that Hunt's got a lot of stuff going for him, but he also has hands that are made of concrete.
Absolutely.
So I just think that becomes a thing to be on the lookout for.
And he said the famous phrase this week, I don't care if he's a black belt. He's not going to be he turns into a white belt when I put my hand on his face.
Yep. And we'll have to obviously see if that happens, because that's, of course, a big X factor. The co-main event, Jake Ellenberger and Kelvin Gastelum. Kelvin Gastelum, who is flawless after coming out of the Tough House and putting Uriah Hall on blast and starting his career.
Talk about
off.
Underdogs.
Right.
Yeah.
Putting his career
Uriah
on.
Hall was supposed to walk through him.
Yeah. And that didn't
happen. He out-wrestled him and won. Yeah,
didn't
it was
happen
sweet.
At all. And I think... Jake has had his struggles. He's looked a little bit better.
I think he's on a 2 or 3 fight losing streak right now.
Yeah.
But this is still the number 7 guy in the division.
Yeah, and that's why he's looked a little bit better. Obviously, his record doesn't reflect that, but I think his fights have looked a little bit better, maybe, sort of.
I'm pulling for the underdog in this one. I want to see Kelvin win this. He's got something going against him, though, in that he had struggle making weight, so he was working with Dolce. He called Dolce to work with him on this fight, and Dolce supposedly didn't answer his call for a number of reasons. Now, Dolce has come out to say that he's been a long-term friend of Ellenberger. He has other UFC fit obligations during this time.
Sure.
And just generally, he feels that Kelvin gets too far out of shape, out of fight camp.
Out of fight camps,
and
yeah.
It was too soon for him to jump in. So we'll see how his weight cut goes. He said in interviews earlier this week that he was feeling great, but when are they ever going to say I'm not feeling great?
They hardly ever actually say.
So that, I'm pulling for Kelvin with the upset win, undefeated, and he's just a star. Super young kid. He's like one of the youngest guys in the UFC as well.
Yeah, he's part of that flock of guys that are in
first-generation Mexican, speaks fluent Mexican, so it'll be cool to see him.
Absolutely. Ricardo Lamas and Dennis Bermudez on this card. A very fun fight and a very tough one, as Lamas is no joke, and Bermudez, again, another fun fighter to watch at that weight class, and two guys to keep an eye on.
Absolutely.
As both of them try and get back at Aldo at some point.
I remember Lamas going five rounds with Aldo. Do you remember that fight? Uh-huh. I mean, he could barely walk afterwards, but he was a warrior out there.
Yeah, well, he's a dude that he's a tough dude to stop, right?
Oh, yeah. But the feeling I had about him during that Aldo fight is that Aldo is the number one guy in the world, and he's just a few percent behind him. You know, he's a little bit younger. He doesn't have the experience and slightly less talented, right? Not that he can't develop that.
Sure.
So he got another win under his belt, and now this is a super tough challenge for him.
Yeah, well, and could be a big jump for Bermudez, who's no slouch at that weight class.
Agreed,
But a win over Lamas is one that, again, puts you, we've talked about it in this show and the last, you know, you get these huge wins and it puts you on a different level. You know, you beat Shogun and now people are like, what's this OSP thing?
Exactly.
You know, right?
Yeah.
So Bermudez could have a night like that. On the other side of the coin, you've got Bellator 131 with, for me, outside of the Will Brooks, Michael Chandler fight, there isn't a lot that I'm really interested in. King Mo is fighting. Manoff is fighting, which is nice. Former UFC fighter Nam Phan is fighting. And then, of course,
where did he come from?
Right?
I didn't see him on their first card.
You know, and
that's
then
sweet. Why not put him on there?
Why not? And then, of course, the main event I couldn't care less about between Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner.
It's going to be a joke. That will be entertaining. And if you remember, so this was that big reveal where Stefan Bonner brought this masked guy into the cage,
right,
and then like talked poorly about his wife, and they've been going back and forth. And supposedly Stefan Bonner asked the UFC to go to Bellator just to fight Tito Ortiz. So it's this big WWE storyline going on. It's kind of sad. Were you a Tito fan back in the day? I mean, when he was tearing up the division, I loved Tito.
I never was, only because that I'm just, even back then, wasn't wired with the trash talking. You know, like I could get, like I was behind him when he was fighting Shamrock because they were both equally a-holes, right?
Okay.
So then you go, okay, the guy who's got talent in the a-hole battle.
He definitely makes it hard to be his fan.
He makes it very, he caters to a very specific type of fan, people that want the antithesis of societal norms, right?
And him in the whole Dana White debacle. So, yeah, I mean, I was a huge fan and then slowly fell off. Stefan Bonner, clearly, I think he got his last fight is when he tested positive in the UFC. So neither of these guys are coming into this fight, you know, on any kind of title contention.
Yeah, and I get you're trying to make a name for yourself. It's sort of interesting enough to be on free TV that I may or may not. I mean, we'll watch it because that's what we do. But if I'm a casual fan, it's sort of kind of interesting enough to watch for free.
If UFC 180 wasn't on that night, I would definitely watch it.
Sure. Yeah. But now that it is, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that whole thing shakes out. A couple other really exciting things. Well, one sad thing to talk about. Holly Holm out of the December card. She's got an injury, so you don't get to see her make her debut. I have not seen a tentative timeline.
I haven't either, but
my guess would be March.
This isn't her first injury. She's been somewhat injury prone throughout her career.
Yeah, so I'm guessing February, March before you actually see her debut, which is a shame because, well, the timing might be perfect to fight Ronda Rousey at some point. You know, I'm not saying she gets an automatic title shot, but the timing might be awesome. And it didn't take long. Anthony Johnson reinstated last week right before we went on the air, which is awesome. And he is now fighting Alexander Gustafsson
January 24th
in Sweden, which I think is a fantastic fight.
Are you kidding me? It's crazy.
It's a fantastic fight, and I can hardly even wait. Rumble has had a resurgence. It was nice to see everything work out for him. And, you know, I don't take any of that domestic abuse stuff lightly, but it was nice to
see. I didn't follow this story, really.
Eventually, the end of the story is that everything was dropped, so everything goes back to normal. And whatever the story is, I don't take it lightly. But
yeah,
he's back in, and this is what we get to see, and it is awesome. The other awesome fight that I'm super excited about is Yoel Romero, and Jacare's elbow, it will be good enough by UFC 184 to take that fight. And that's another one at that weight class to kind of prove who's where and what they're going to be doing.
So Jacare takes it on the ground, clearly.
Yeah.
Yoel is a monster.
Well, a monster wrestler and a guy, you know, and I say,
yeah, Yoel was the Puerto Rican Olympian.
Cuban
Olympian.
You know,
right?
Cuban Olympian.
Might even got a silver medal, I believe.
Was it silver? I couldn't remember if it was silver or gold, but irrelevant to the discussion, but saying that when I say he's got great wrestling, it's kind of an understatement, right? So in order for jiu-jitsu to work, you have to get past the wrestling, usually.
Right.
That's usually
That'll
how
be
it
a
works.
Fun fight.
The fun part about it, though, is as Jacare has come out, well, his last couple fights in Strikeforce, you started to see this happen, and as he's come into the UFC, he has fallen in love with his hands, which makes for a really, really exciting fighter. And now that he's got his elbow issue out of the way, and if you weren't paying attention, when you have tennis elbow, what happens is your nerves run over the top of your elbow, right? And that's what causes he was having, I guess, bone spurs as because of that. And then they were actually damaging the nerve. So they went in there and they did some fixing because he was having numbness in his arms. And I can speak to that as I've had that on and off over the last year, that it's very hard to train when you can't feel your arm. So he's gotten that fixed. And he will be taking on Yoel Romero at UFC 184. Also at 184, shaping up to be a huge, huge card. Frank Mir and Big Foot Silva. Frank Mir stepping back into the octagon to get stomped by Bigfoot.
You think
I don't know. I love Frank Mir, but Bigfoot is one of those guys that I think at one point it was fun to make fun of how big he was
Not on the juice anymore.
I don't know.
If Frank Mir, so Frank
neither
Mir,
one of them are on the juice.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Frank Mir has never came back from breaking his leg, right? He's just always been second fiddle. This is another guy. I think the whole heavyweight division, like we talked about earlier, is pretty thin. If you look at the average age of a heavyweight compared to even a middleweight, I mean, Mark Hunt is 40 years old.
40 on the nose, yep.
40 years old, and we're talking about Shogun at 32 is seen as days, you know? Hunt's been fighting since he was like 16. So it's, I mean, I'll watch the fight. I'm not too excited about it. I think it's a little bit of a sad thing to see. Like, I feel a little bad for Frank Mir. I would rather see him sitting behind the desk commentating in his suit, not getting his head punched in.
I just don't know that he has that skill set either, though. He doesn't really strike me as a guy that I want to see talk.
He was decent. I mean,
he's not awesome.
He wasn't the worst. I love it. He's not awesome.
I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, when you look at guys like Dominic Cruz, who are naturals, right? Dominic Cruz is a natural on Fox. And guys like Brian Stann have grown into it. And Kenny Florian has grown into it.
Ken Flo isn't my favorite.
He doesn't have to be your favorite, but he's
Daniel
good at
Cormier, who's in, these two guys are doing UFC tonight, which is like a great show to watch. But without Chael Sonnen, I'd like to see what their numbers are. I'm sure they just nosedived because I fall asleep watching it now.
Let's be honest, dude. How many people are watching UFC tonight on Wednesday night anyway? I think you're dealing with a game of inches, really.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't think there's a lot of people.
Bunch of MMA nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
But now we're MMA nerds who are sleeping.
It's you, me, and Ariel Helwani watching UFC tonight, who's actually on the show. So he's just watching to see when it's his turn to talk. So I don't know. I just think he's not really that awesome at it. Maybe he could get better. I don't know. A couple other fights.
Point is, I just don't want to see him in the cage anymore.
That's
I'd like
fine.
To see him
well,
doing something.
You're
going to
see him one more time,
I guess.
Sure. Tate. Had her fight scrapped. She's now going to be fighting Sarah McMahon at UFC 183. So if you're looking to see Misha Tate one more time, that is where you will find her. A very exciting fight. A bit insider, I will admit, but keep an eye on these two because they're going to be guys to watch. In Brandon Thatch taking on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, that is going to be a huge fight at UFC Fight Night Colorado, and one I'm very excited to see. I get it if you're listening and going, I don't know who the hell those two guys are. That's totally fine. Just watch it and thank me later.
Yeah, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson with his moneymaker, he throws a 1-2 round kick to the head, knocking guys out. traditional Taekwondo guy. I think his background, I think his dad's like a black belt or something. He grew up doing Taekwondo.
He had some crazy...
So he's got a pretty sweet style in there.
He's got a sweet style and an insane kickboxing record when he came into the UFC. And he's obviously hasn't been unblemished in the UFC, but I think that's good for the soul to not be unblemished.
Right.
And so you will get to see him taking on another up-and-comer that people are really excited in Brandon Thatch. And that'll be a fun one to watch and see where these guys are going to land, right? Because a win here, now you have to start having a serious discussion as to, okay, where are we putting you in the division, and where are you fighting next, and what's that trajectory look like, and when do you get your title shot? Because that's, of course, the point of all of these fights. One interesting note that came out this week that I want to spend a couple minutes talking about is Ariel Helwani attempted to interview Tim Kennedy on his knee injury, and Tim said, "Yeah, I've got a knee injury. I'm going to have some work done." And then I don't know what's next. And Ariel's like, "Oh yeah, okay, cool. When are you coming back?" He's no, I mean, I'm all serious. Like I don't know what's next. And I don't know, there hasn't been anything, since that on Wednesday night that has said, he is retiring or he's done with it or whatever the deal is,
but
a very weird thing coming out of the Kennedy camp to just say, I don't really know what we're going to do next.
I can't see him retiring. I mean, he's top of his game, fantastic fighter, mentally one of the toughest guys in the UFC. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast and, just a great guy.
Sure.
The guy you'd love to go out and have a beer with. Solid, you know, solid guy, very intelligent. You know, he's been in the military for quite a long time, so he's super tough guy. I can't see him putting him up right now, especially when he's so successful.
But you would readily admit a weird thing to say to Ariel Helwani, right?
Absolutely. And maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't need fighting. Maybe he has other opportunities that could be equally as lucrative.
Well, I certainly think with a guy like that, that's absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
And we'll keep you posted as we get any more information on that. Okay, UFC 180 this weekend, Bellator 131. If I'm being completely honest, we will cover everything in the world of UFC this weekend, and we'll probably make quite a bit of fun at Bellator 131 as we flip back and forth on Saturday night. So follow along on Twitter at Wow Show or on Facebook at Wow Show. Joe, have a wonderful weekend.
Hey, you too.
And we will be back next weekend or next week for UFC. What is next week?
I'm sure there's something.
There always is something. It will be UFC something that we will cover. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.